right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
Woo! We're late because of Mason.
Yeah. It happens.
Couldn't figure out how to get the music to play.
Story of my life.
And we were even, like, the talent was even here, and we had 5 extra minutes.
Yeah, we were on time. Still late. We were early, actually.
Damn it.
Tell me the story about this Mason beanie you're wearing.
What?
Did you hand make that?
It looks handmade for Shizzle.
Oh, no. So when we were overseas, this crazy cat lady sent us literally a care package full of knit wool things.
That's
like hats
cool.
And scarves and doilies, which
use a lot of doilies in Afghanistan, bro.
Hey man, I don't know.
Hey, we can't get this dirt wet.
They all smelled like cat, but they were warm, so I still haven't. My other beanie's at the cleaners, so I'm wearing this one.
I stole this heat. Mom's house.
No, it's in my washing machine right now because I haven't switched it to the dryer yet.
All right.
No big deal.
All right.
We're in the Official Wilderness Tactical Studio. Remember our gear scholarship. We get more and more requests for equipment every week. We say this, but we're still offering out our gear scholarship. We really prefer to give it out to, you know, law enforcement, military, even fire EMS, youth shooting organizations.
Boy Scouts,
whatever. Someone who we know really has a use for it, a need for it.
But Girl Scouts.
If you're an individual and you have a... you have a need. I'll tell you who I just gave some stuff to. He sent me an email.
Is it me?
He said he's talking about what he does and why he wants the gear scholarship and why he wants to put some of this stuff to use in the field and send us photos and stuff. And he says, and I quote, I hunt a shit ton. I was like, I like that.
All right.
I like that.
That seems legitimate.
Make sure you check out The Wilderness at thewilderness.com. Get some of their products. We use their products every single day of our life. So
yeah, buddy.
You should definitely get some for yourself. Our show today brought to you by Hex Mag. Buy Hex Mags. They're aesthetically pleasing, and they're very functional.
Work like a champ.
And inexpensive.
Own some in your life, and you can customize them and make them super cool. And they're coming out with all kinds of cool stuff. As we talked about last week on the show, we've got the 308 mags, the grip panels, the new advanced tactical grip, which is basically made by Ergo Grip, and soon, sometime this year, Glock mags.
Yeah.
Very excited
Possible.
About that. Looking forward to that. Remember, everybody deployed, folks. We still have people overseas. Don't forget that.
Wait, what?
I know, shocker.
We're still at war?
War's not over. Surprise. Surprise, America.
Bush ended that shit like a decade ago.
No,
yeah, we're good.
Didn't we declare victory in 2003 or something?
We're good.
Like 3 days after it started, just like the first time.
Dang it. Well, turns out we're still at war, so pay attention to that.
All right. We won the conventional war.
Oh, let's see. What's happened since our last show? Lots of stuff. Precision rifle. Classes, lots of fun. Again, the second weekend in a row we've done precision rifle. Lots of fun. My wonderful wife took the class, the 2-day class, and she did phenomenally.
Well,
she's like a sniper.
I was very.
That doesn't
very
surprise
happy.
Me. She also had a, in my opinion, based on the gun that I'm pretty sure you let her shoot. There's also a slight equipment advantage there.
She did have a little bit of an equipment advantage. Remember, skills always trump tools, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You can have the best tools in the world and still totally suck.
And that's why I
see it all the time.
That's why I still totally suck at precision rifle shooting, because I don't go out and do it.
She actually got top shot yesterday.
Nice. Yeah.
So you better not piss Mrs. Glenn off.
Schooled.
Because she can take you out from 600 meters away. No
way
problem.
Out. She did very good job, so that was very cool.
It's awesome.
A lot of fun. Mason has a good shooting story for us. Mason shot your second match.
Well, third.
Third match. Congratulations. And you didn't come in last.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's
close,
important.
But
just a bit outside. So well done, Mason. Tell us about it. What'd you do?
I shot the pistol caliber anything match at the Rio Salado shooting range this past weekend. Yesterday. With my shooting mentor / Sith master, Russell Fagan.
Yeah.
And it was cool. It was cool. I shot a pistol caliber carbine. The one that we shot was a KE Arms 9mm lower that we just started manufacturing, so we were kind of putting it through its paces with a side charging upper on it. Not a big fan of the side charging upper thing. There are some badass ones out there. The one that we used is not one of those badass ones.
Mm.
But it was cool though. Shooting a pistol caliber carbine was awesome. I've only shot like MP5s and Uzis before. I had never run like an AR style, you know. It was cool. It definitely made it easier shooting that versus shooting a handgun. Absolutely. There were people running Glocks, people running some like $1,400 pistols that Russell's telling me about. Yeah, it's like a special build kit that
good people God.
For you, and they cost like $2,400.
I'll pass.
And they sucked. And then I went out there with like a $700 pistol caliber carbine and pew, 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 was killing it. So it was pretty cool. I would recommend doing it. I actually ran into, so I was loading one of my 32-round magazine after one of the matches, and I like drop this box, and this guy and this woman are walking by, and he bends down, picks it up, and he's like, oh, I got that for you, Sergeant. And I was like, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And I was like, wait a minute, what? Why would you call me that? And, like, and it turns out one of the soldiers in my unit.
Oh, that's cool.
He was like, oh, you know, you come out here and shoot matches and stuff? And I'm like, yeah, man. You know, I just started doing it and getting into it. And he's like, yeah, my wife and I shoot some shotgun stuff, but we're thinking about getting into two-gun. And I was like, absolutely, you should. You should try it. Get out there. It's a good time. It's a good way to keep your skills up.
Nice.
Told him about our match that we have coming up.
Coming up this weekend.
Yeah, this weekend. Yeah, so maybe we can get some more people involved in that. But it was just cool to run into someone you don't normally run into outside of one weekend a month. So that was cool. There are people out there that shoot guns, Glenn. It's awesome.
And they know you.
And they know who I am. Yeah. So that was cool. It was a good match. I mean, Russell, of course, placed top three, I think. I placed 32nd out of 43 with rank, but like 48 people because some of them didn't even rank because they didn't complete certain events, you know. So not that last, middle of the pack pretty much, which is basically the story of my life.
Story of your life.
So that's all right. I'm happy with that.
That's all right, dude.
It was fun. Get out there and shoot competitions, people. It's fun. It's good times. Get to mingle.
Yeah.
No one where I was takes it super seriously, which is awesome. So that was cool. It was a good time.
It's good to finally hear someone else in here preaching the good word, Mason. Get out there and shoot some competitions. They're fun. They'll push your capabilities of your skills. They'll push the capabilities of your equipment. And you get to see kind of where you stack up against other people in your general martial shooting skills. You know, how quickly can you acquire targets and engage them? And anybody out there who thinks, oh, well, I'm a combat shooter, so I don't want to shoot competition because it's just a game. Well, then go out, just show up and win then. If you're so awesome, go ahead and just show up and win. That's how it must be super easy for you. Show up and win that game, right?
It's an easy game.
You won't. You probably won't do either. You're probably too scared to show up, number one. And two, you won't show up and win because you're not as good as you think you are. But show up. I consider myself to be a good shooter, and I still regularly get schooled by guys who are not high-speed, low-drag badasses. They're just dudes who put more time into shooting. You know, they just put more time into shooting, and they understand fast sight acquisition and proper trigger control and good analogy of stages and all that good stuff. So show up and shoot. You'll have a good time. Guarantee it. All right. Anything else? Anything else in the news? I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. There was a terrorist attack up in Quebec.
I didn't even hear
that. I think Trump is pissing people off left and right.
Sweet.
What?
Good.
So that's fun. People are still...
Oh, we got to talk about the FedEx guy.
Being boohoo.
You heard about the FedEx guy?
No, tell me.
So there was this rally in... Shit, you're going to make me... Iowa, I think it was.
Yeah, somewhere in Iowa.
Where these freaking hippie pico communists were burning American flags, right? Oh, they're like, oh, nice. America's imperialist and stuff. Like, right. What are you talking about? But anyway, so they're bitching about and Trump not being their president and stuff.
Oh, right.
Well, they were burning flags. So this FedEx guy who was like on his route sees this. And he stops his truck, gets out, goes over to these hippies, rips the American flag that they're trying to burn out of their hands, and takes it back to his truck. And then they get another flag out. He gets the fire extinguisher from his truck and goes back and puts the flag out and grabs that flag from them too. And one of these hippies like tries to take it back. So he sprays him in the face with the fire extinguisher because he attacked him. And so then he went back to his truck and took the flags and left. He didn't like hit anybody or fight anybody. He just walked over, took the flags, left. And then this other like millennial age kit guy was there, and he was like, look, I don't like Donald Trump either, but you don't burn the American flag. That's disrespectful. And all the hippies were like, well, what a da da da. We do whatever we want. And then he was like, screw you guys. You guys suck. And then he walked away. Well, FedEx, everyone started this petition to not have him fired.
Yeah.
And FedEx was like, we weren't going to fire the guy. We totally support what he did and thank him for doing that. So I watched an interview that he did with a local news station, and he was an 8-year Army veteran that got out, and now he just works for FedEx, and people are calling him a hero and stuff like that. And he's like, I just didn't want to see the American flag burn, so I took it. He's like, I don't deserve to be thanked, right? But people have made a ton of memes about him. They like putting his photo and photoshopping into different situations. So he said on the show his favorite one is they took the Call of Duty Modern Warfare like loading screen and they replaced the silhouette with him and holding a fire extinguisher. And he's like, I just think it's funny that people made these things about me, but I don't deserve any thanks or anything like that. So I thought that was pretty badass, man. So good on you. Now it's a big thing everywhere. So good on you, FedEx guy, and good on you, FedEx, for supporting your employees when they back up America. I like to see that.
Word.
Now I'm looking it up. I'm going to see if I can find this dude's name real quick.
Oh, it's well, he's got a weird name. But yeah. I had it yesterday. Crap. It's like Matt Uhall or something like that, I think. I have the interwebs.
You have the interwebs as well? Well, since no one bothered to ask me, I'll go ahead and share my weekend.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry, hey, we were still finishing Mason.
No, you're good. I celebrated my 10th wedding anniversary this weekend.
Oh, congratulations. 10 years
of marital bliss.
Oh, dude, it's been great. The HH6 is a super classy lady. We had a fantastic evening with no children.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, God, that's so nice. If you've been married for more than 5 minutes and you have more than one child or more than zero children, dump them off somewhere and go on a date with your significant other. Just go. Just do it. Don't be scared. Give it a shot. It was pretty awesome.
Glad you got to
go
out.
Nice casual evening. It's fantastic.
Very nice. Hey, that guy's...
And we got to sleep in the next morning. That was the best part.
Stop. You're getting me excited. Sleeping in.
No screaming babies at like 5:30 in the morning. We have to sleep until like 7:15.
Ooh, 7:15, huh?
Hey, man.
For me, sleeping in is like
noon.
10. If I get up at 10 o'clock, I'll consider that sleeping in. But that guy's name is Matt Uhrin, U-H-R-I-N,
got it.
By the way. So Matt Uhrin, if you ever hear anything from our show, thank you very much for what you did.
Good work, guy.
Freaking tech. There's a photo. I got this photo of him putting out a flag with a fire extinguisher.
We got to put a meme up or something on the Arms Room page after this with that guy in it. So we should have him on the show.
I'm loving it. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Good dude.
I'm glad he got involved. I'm glad he stepped up and did the right thing. That's freaking awesome. All right.
And he didn't have to kill a bunch of hippies either. He did.
Yeah, you don't have to go in swinging and knocking people out.
He didn't do it illegally. He just walked in, took the flag, and left.
You won't do this.
So the city of whatever city they were in charged the people burning the flag with a burning ordinance. And they were like, you can't do that because we're using freedom of speech. And like, yeah, but you didn't file permits to have a fire. So
you don't have burn permits.
Yeah, you didn't have any burn permits. So they charged him with that. So
that's
good on
so fantastic.
If you're going to do it, you gotta obey the laws.
You follow all of the laws.
That's right. There's a responsibility with every right. All right, John, Redwire, gear moment, go.
Read a book. That's it. And fiction, nonfiction, whatever. I don't care. Go to your local library, go to the bookstore somewhere, pick up a book and read, you know, grab a history book, grab something, just read for a little bit every day. It'll help expand your mind and help you relax, and it'll get you off of your frickin' cell phone and your Instagram and your Facebook and the television and this and that and the other, you know, and pick up a book and read a book, man. That's all I got for you today. Expand the mind.
Expand your mind. All right. Redwire Gear moment brought to you by RedwireGear.com. Check them out. All kinds of cool stuff going on. Get your med kit, Mark 82. Get your sling.
Get your Mark 82. Get your rifle slings, wallets.
Get your ear pro wraps.
So I started on a super secret project that you've been hounding me about for a long time.
Yeah, I saw it in your office.
Yeah. So we won't tell anybody what it is yet, but something super awesome will be. We'll have something new probably end of the spring. Because that'll give us enough time to get a couple of prototypes out there, get them tested and refined.
Good. I'm glad you're working on it because I haven't hounded you about it for a while.
Yeah.
All right. Alrighty. So our topic today, the prepper mindset and why you need to stop prepping for one singular event. Or more importantly, while prepping, why prepping for one event is counterproductive. So first of all, let's talk about this whole prepper mindset, right? And this is something we've talked about on the show before, but I am aware, and by the way, I got to note this, okay? We get a lot of messages every week about from people who are like, hey, I really like how you guys talk about this topic. Why don't you talk about this topic? And what I really want to say to them is, why don't you go to thearmsroomshow.com and look at the past couple of months, because we just talked about that topic 2 months ago, 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, whatever. So don't forget, you guys, we have this whole list of shows we've been doing for like, I don't know,
almost three years
or whatever.
Yeah, like we're in the beginning of our third year of this.
So it's like we've done a few shows and we try to repeat popular topics because we always kind of have a different take or different guests or different, you know, rants or whatever. But make sure that you realize we've got all these other shows you can go look at. Go to thearmsroomshow.com, go to listen to shows, and then you know, look back through the list. We've got all kinds of stuff. So, you know, sometimes I get requests like, hey, you guys should do a show about this. I'm like, you even listened to our show 3 weeks ago?
We did that show. Last week, literally. We did that show last week.
So good idea to go back and look at some of our other shows, all right? So I know sometimes we repeat shows, but a lot of times we're doing it simply because, you know, we have other topics or other things in that topic we didn't get to talk to. So this is something I know I've said before, and that's this. When, you know, growing up, we were prepared for all kinds of stuff. We had food storage and water storage, and we lived kind of rurally, so we had extra tools and we had extra stuff. We had extra things that we might need at daily occurrences, and we also knew how to use all that stuff. I mean, as a kid, we got taught how to drive nails. We got taught how to do, you know, all kinds of things. Excuse me. We got taught how to garden. We were expected to work. We had chores. We learned ethics, you know, work ethics and things like that, individual values and all that, right? We were taught all those things that prepared us for a lot more emergencies than storing up 10,000 rounds of ammunition and, you know, flashbangs or whatever. So the prepper mindset that's become really common or not common, but very popular, I guess, over the last, I don't know, maybe decade or so, has been kind of associates a certain type of lifestyle that we like to live with this word that I don't like to use.
Prepper.
Yeah, which is prepper, right? When I was a kid, it was survivalist. And survivalist was thought about this guy who, like, lived in a bunker.
It's like this weird hippie that lived in a bunker out in the middle of nowhere. Didn't really talk to people, and he always wore camouflage. And he was super creepy.
Yeah, and he was super creepy. And you, like, see him at the feed store, and you'd be like, don't talk to that guy. You know what I mean? Like, that guy's crazy. He lives in a bunker underground, and he wears tinfoil hats, and he thinks the black helicopters are coming to get him.
I'd love to have an underground bunker. That'd be neat.
And then you'd never get any girls, Mason. It's bad enough as it is.
Oh, I wanted to read the definition of prepper.
Oh, okay, go for it.
All right, please. Right now.
So as Wikipedia, which is the definitive source on the internet anything.
Yes, naturally, yeah.
Says survivalism is a movement of individuals or groups called survivalists or preppers who are actively preparing for emergencies, including possible disruptions in social or political order on scales from local to international. The word prepper and prep are derived from the word prepare. Survivalists often acquire emergency medical and self-defense training, stockpile food and water, preparing to become self-sufficient, and building structures like underground shelters or survival retreats that may help them survive a catastrophe. So that's what Wikipedia says survivalists and preppers are. Under that definition, I guess we're kind of survival and preppers. But like Wikipedia says, preparing for emergencies, plural, not emergency, like zombie apocalypse, which is a big one that people like to use. So real preppers prepare for more than one thing. They're not just there for like zombies are going to take over the planet and stuff. Like, look, if that's what you need to pretend is going to happen in order for you to prepare things, then whatever. I guess I'd rather have you do that than not at all.
How do you know you're not going to be one of the zombies, though?
Yeah. You could be patient zero, like World War
II. Just curious. Like, everybody always talks about that, but nobody's like, well,
it's airborne.
Crap, I could be that guy. I could be a zombie.
Airborne. So why prepare at all? Screw it. If you're going to be the zombie, I mean, why have any?
10 rounds in a dead man's rucksack.
All you need is a brain or something. Store some brains and you'll be all right.
Yeah, you'd be good.
So on that note, right, here's the problem with prepping for one event and where people don't, you know, typically don't really think about what's going on in their whole emergency preparedness thing. And this is stuff that we've talked about before on the show. We're going to talk about it again. And that is because it doesn't seem to get through to everybody all the time. One, physical fitness.
What?
Yeah.
God,
you know,
bless
America. We talk about being hard to kill all the time.
Oh, Jesus.
And, you know, if you want to be hard to kill and you want to survive emergencies – like, I had this one moment in my
life. Stop eating Cheetos.
Yeah. Well, no, you can eat Cheetos, just not all the time and not anything else and not exercise. You don't have time to exercise because you don't make time to exercise.
It's true.
That's it.
I skipped my workout this morning because it was more important for me to lay in bed with my wife.
You know?
That's a risk I was willing to take today.
Here's the idea for me and physical fitness. I had a moment in my life that was – I heard a quote this last – week, I went to this emergency medical conference and I was listening to a kind of a survivor's report, so to speak, from a guy who survived a very nasty accident that happened to kill one of our friends. And so hearing about it was kind of tough because I'd heard the story about how He died, but I had never heard the story from the guy who was laying next to him when he died. So that was it was kind of interesting, and it really obviously piqued my interest and made me want to listen to the story. And one of the things that this survivor said that was interesting was he said, we don't have bad days, we just have bad moments. Like, every day is a good day, we just have bad moments. Because people go, oh, today's a bad day, or today's a good day. It's like, it's true. You don't have bad days, you just have bad moments. And I had this series of bad moments on this one relatively good day that essentially should have killed me and didn't. And when I was recovering in the hospital, I was told by my doctor that one of the two main things that saved me was good physical fitness. The other thing that saved me was when I went completely hypothermic with the 88-degree body core temperature. And my body slowed down so much and basically shut down to where it was easier to bring back to life. If I would have been operating at full temperature, I would have died because I had tension pneumo and all kinds of other crap. But the problem with – or not the problem, but the solution from that I really took away and have used my entire life is – physical fitness has literally saved my life. Now, that was an anecdotal, right? It was one experience. Over all the experiences I've had in my life, that was just one of them. But I look back at my life and say, I don't even know how many times physical fitness has saved my life. How many times has it kept me from getting grievously hurt?
Yeah, but that's not
– Or sick or ill or anything like that.
That may be anecdotal to your life. But that is not anecdotal at all. If you go and you look at – half dozen or a dozen or so of the old look at Medal of Honor recipients. Look at the Silver Star recipients. Look at the level that these guys were most of the time. Well, there's always exceptions, but if you look at the level that most of these guys were operating at, they were all in fairly peak physical condition to be able to absorb the things that they absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go back and read just any type of survivor thing. The dude that cut his own arm off up in Utah several years ago, that dude had to have been in good shape.
Yeah, Aaron Ralston.
To be able to pull that off. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, fitness is not... Yes, it may be anecdotal to my life, or it may be anecdotal to your life specifically, but overall, it is not anecdotal, period. Like, that's step one. Become more physically fit.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and I'll agree. It's not anecdotal overall. So, it's to me, physical fitness, when people talk about being prepared, you know, we used to do those survivalist shows. And John went, I mean, I don't know how many we did, dude. What, like eight of them or something?
Yeah.
Probably. I don't know. It was a lot. And... we would go fantastic. To these survivalist shows, Arizona Survivalist Expo or whatever.
Prepper Expo.
And we would go to these shows and we would have a little table and we would talk to people. And let me just be blunt here, okay? Because that's the best way I know how to talk. These giant fat people, okay, would show up and they would want to be getting prepared. And they're there to buy gear and they're buying
gadgets and
camouflage
food.
Dildos or whatever the hell it was they were looking for.
Holy
they make those?
Some bull crap, freaking junk piece of crap survival tool that some hack
super awesome knife
has been wannabe whatever is trying to pimp based on his XYZ background, trying to convince everybody that this is the greatest tool that's ever been made for your survival. And he sounds this giant fat person. I want to walk in and be like, stop buying gadgets.
Go buy a kettlebell instead.
And go get fit. You don't need to go look like a CrossFit model. None of us in this room certainly look like CrossFit models, but we are physically fit to a certain degree, right? Some of us more than others, some of us less than others. In our entire instructor team, it's like that.
Yeah.
In our entire friends group, it's like that. We have friends who are insanely fit, you know, and some who are still working on it, right? But they're working on it. That's the point. You know, so it's like you don't need more gadgets. You need to go get fit. Quit buying TRX bands and perfect push-ups and Pilates bullshit freaking videos and go get fit. You can do so much with so little. So little.
So what you're saying is you should start with, I don't know, maybe a walk around the block.
Yeah, get out and just do some basic cardio. Go for a light jog. I don't care if your jog is a simple freaking double step march. Go for a jog. You know what I mean? Even if you're just quickly walking, I don't care.
Start with a walk. Like, if you're that far gone, just start with a walk. Let's not hurt ourselves.
And then walk quickly, and then jog, and then
walk farther.
Jog faster, and then walk further. And then you don't have to go out and start running 5 miles. Do a mile. Do around the block. Do a half a mile.
Yeah, start with going around the block.
You know, do a couple sprints up and down your road. I mean, you don't even have to do a ton.
Nope.
Right? And then start doing some basic push-ups and sit-ups. These are things that will cost you nothing.
No.
Monetarily. Time. Some people, I don't have money to join the gym. I don't have money. You don't need that. Nope. The majority of my workouts are done with push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, running, cardio, calisthenics, and some kettlebells.
Yeah.
I don't even go to the gym.
And they're all terrible.
Yeah, I use ammo cans full of ammo. They're
all terrible.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's so much I can do with stuff I already have around the house. You know, I do exercises with firearms because they're, you know, isometrics.
Mm-hmm.
And do all kinds of cool stuff with very, very little money invested, mostly stuff you already have. So one, fitness. You want to get all prepared for emergencies, fitness.
Yep.
And then some more fitness with mix in some fitness also.
And then teach your kids some fitness.
Yeah. And that's another part of it. You want to create a generational impact. Like for me growing up, right, I looked at the way my parents taught us how to be prepared. It made me a more prepared person. Mm-hmm. And my siblings, even as kind of different as they've gone with some of their political views and stuff, they still have that same preparedness mentality. Mm-hmm. They may not live exactly like I do or believe exactly like I do or whatever. They don't have to. They still have that preparedness mindset. You know what I mean? I look at some of my one of my sisters who's kind of a hippie, and yet you know and so is her husband. And you look in the back of their vehicle, you'll still find emergency preparedness stuff. They still carry around IFACs. You know what I mean? Like these are
impossible.
Yeah, these are
impossible.
These are people who you know you wouldn't necessarily think have the exact political you know linings that we do, but they still want to be prepared for emergencies. So it's not like you know that example that my parents set is lasted through all of us. And now we're all teaching our kids that.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, your kids are going to see you exercise mm-hmm. or not.
Yep.
You know, and you may have that one kid who doesn't like to exercise or you don't exercise and your one kid's like, hey, I want to be fixed. I don't want to be like my fat dad or whatever. And maybe that's a situation, right? Maybe you have that kind of mentality. Impossible. But we're products of our environment, you know, for the most part. And so that has a lasting impact. And I would rather my kids see me exercise and be fit and go, hey, I need to exercise. I need to be fit. That's important, you know. And again, I don't know how many times physical fitness has saved my life. You want to talk about emergency preparedness? I don't know how many times it saved my life. I know for a fact one time it definitely saved my life.
Word.
Other than that, I don't know how many times. And more, though. Definitely more than that one time. You know, there's times where I've gotten hurt and recovered quicker than other people, or I haven't gotten hurt. I almost got hurt but didn't, mm-hmm. right, because my body was in such a shape that it didn't get completely damaged, where if I might have been in lesser shape, it might have gotten damaged. Or I've staved off sickness or disease or gotten over something faster or whatever, right? So physical fitness is important. So that's number one.
All right.
To me.
What's number two?
Number two is to consider realistic emergencies.
Wait, what?
Yeah. What are you actually planning for?
Oh.
So most preppers Lord. And emergency preparedness survivalist types, what do they plan for?
Well, number one, we're still looking at the zombie apocalypse. Looking at social breakdown in general, martial law, economic collapse, things that...
Which is funny because martial law is, in fact, the purest form of government working, like, overtime.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're preparing for a sociological collapse when, in fact, martial law does not donate sociological collapse. It's like uber uncollapse, pretty much, when everything is controlled.
Everything is
like
controlled.
Every single part curfews. Of your life is controlled.
But see, that's part of the thing they're preparing for, because they're preparing to fight that martial law. Yeah, exactly.
So here's the problem with that, though. I mean, here's the problem with preparing for these singular events is that you can't prepare for a singular event. Not really.
No.
Unless you are going to spend your whole life studying and living and working inside of that type of environment where you understand every facet of it, you can't prepare for that singular event. It was like... You know, we talk about a lot the difference between like our basic training and mm-hmm. Mason's basic training, right?
Yeah.
Which wars were we trained for, John?
Dude, I was still getting trained for Cold War.
Getting trained for the Cold War, right? I'm 9/11. I'm pre-9/11.
Open up a canteen and pass it down the line of the squad so that it doesn't swish around and you're still on patrol.
Correct. Like we were getting Cold War.
I've never heard of that before.
Oh, yeah, oh, buddy. Dude, real shit.
We got to teach you some. We need to sit down with Mason and teach him some old school shit. All right. So, I mean, we got taught for Cold War, right? So if at that time people were preparing for war,
like right
what war were they preparing for?
We were preparing to go back to
conventional war.
They were preparing for conventional war, right? Mason went through basic in what, 2010, 2011, something like that?
11.
Totally different. A decade plus later, And he's going.
Yeah, we pretty much don't focus at all on conventional warfare.
Yeah, no, it's all unconventional. We don't fighting an insurgency.
And we learn. We always learn about fighting an enemy that we are numerically superior to as well. They never teach us like what happens when you're outnumbered because in the last decade of war, we used to
learn how to hide our fighting positions from top cover.
Yeah.
Because Russia has jets and helos and stuff.
Haji don't surf, so we don't have to worry about top cover or anything like that. So
you know, we learned how to gather our foliage from different areas.
Cover and concealment, bro, for real.
That's right, you know, and cover up your fighting position using foliage from different areas so it looked very natural and didn't look like just one spot was kind
of. Whereas now we build giant armed camps in the middle of valleys
and get shot at from everywhere.
It was a different time, so.
So that's the point, is that most people, unless they're just engrossed in current tactics and techniques and procedures, you're probably honestly preparing for whatever it is you know, which is probably old. You're probably not keeping up with the times. You know, I even know special operations guys who, you know, they teach these survival, blah, 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 and I'll look at their programs and they're teaching like pre-9/11 or just slightly post-9/11, or they're teaching 2010 tactics. Dude, it's 2017.
Yeah.
What are we doing now? You know, so how do you prepare for all this stuff? You prepare yourself as an individual to be able to adapt to multiple environments. Mm-hmm. Physical fitness is number one, right?
Right.
Number two is understanding more realistic emergencies to be prepared for. How are you going to prepare for this giant social economic collapse if your tire goes flat on your truck?
So I actually have a really funny story about flat tires. I have a slow leak on one of the tires in my car. And it had gotten low the other day, and I wanted to take it and get it fixed because my wife and I were going to go do some stuff that evening. So I went out to change it because I have a full-size spare because I went and I invested in that. So if you have a donut in your car, don't get rid of your donut. Go get a full-size spare.
Mm-hmm.
Make life way easier.
And functional.
And way more functional. So I go out, and much to my chagrin, I didn't have a jack that would get my car high enough to change my tire, which I'm really glad it wasn't a true emergency. So now I have to go back and correct that deficiency in my life because there was no scissor jack in my car. And I had bought a bottle jack, but it was too short and did not lift my tire high enough to get it off the ground so that I could change it. So yeah, simple thing, you know, a jack in your car. Does your car have one that'll lift it high enough? Do you even have one in your car?
Yeah. If you bought a factory brand new vehicle, then you've got one. But if you bought any kind of used vehicle, is it gone?
Mm-hmm.
Did someone take it out? Did it?
Did
it
you take on? It out and leave it somewhere?
Is it left in your garage or whatever? Make room for something else?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, do you have the appropriate equipment that can actually lift your vehicle up? Do you have a good spare tire? Do you keep it inflated?
Mm-hmm.
Are you using a star jack or one of those crappy tire iron pieces of junk that they include with every factory vehicle? Like, you know, you are going to need a better equipment to do this, especially if it's raining, especially if it's snowing, especially if you're stuck on the side of the road, especially if you're trying to do it in a hurry,
right?
Because it's social economic collapse, and oh my gosh, I just got a spare tire, and I'm trying to evade the whatever pinko commies or whatever, and now I've got to
do this. The zombies are coming. The zombies are coming,
and I'm out there with my little tiny crappy jack, that little scissor jack piece of junk that comes with every car, and my crappy tire, and I don't have enough strength to bust it loose because I haven't eaten for 2 days or whatever. Yeah, think about all this kind of stuff, right? And you're not in good physical condition, so you can't handle not eating for 2 days.
So, right.
Physical fitness, number one. Number two, realistic emergencies.
Yeah.
Right? Realistic emergencies. I'm a lot more likely to, maybe have a job problem or get sick and not be able to work or get cancer or something like that. So am I financially prepared?
That's a good – most people are not.
Are you financially prepared? Can you go a month without working? Could you go a month? Do you have enough in a bank account? Could you go 2 months? Could you go 3 months? How long can you go?
The minimum recommended is 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's like an absolute minimum. What's preferred is 6 months of your normal expenses. And that's everything. That's food, that's groceries, that's gas, that's, you know, and obviously if you're not working, some of that's going to be a little bit excess. Some of that's going to change a little bit because you're going to have different food costs. You're going to have different fuel costs. But 6 months is what is preferred. 3 months is the absolute minimum.
Mm-hmm. And so you look at it and you go, can I survive any kind of real emergency?
Yeah.
Right, like a normal, everyday emergency, not a zombie apocalypse emergency.
Here's another really funny one from my life. Not that long ago, it's probably been 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had gotten out of bed early. I was having myself some breakfast, waiting for my kids to get up, get everybody ready for school and everything.
Mm.
looking out the kitchen window, and I see this bright flash and hear this loud pop, and I'm like, what the hell was that?
Flashbang.
No, sorry, no, it was actually it was a transformer that blew out, and then the power went out in my house. So I had to get my kids up. No lights in my house. Oh, God, what do I do? What do I do? Wait a minute. I have solar lights. I have candles. I have flashlights. So I had to go get all of these things together so that my kids wouldn't lose their minds when they get out of bed because it was still dark, you know. And I was able to get up and get their teeth brushed and get them ready for school. And it really wasn't all that inconvenient other than the fact that they didn't get to watch their cartoons that morning before we left for school or eat their toaster waffles. But other than that, everything went normally, you know.
And the simple emergencies that you might otherwise experience like that are really the things that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. To most people, that might be an emergency.
It's like, oh my God, what do I do?
I don't have any lights. I don't have any power. I don't have. It's like, dude, no big deal. Just pull out the stuff you've already prepared for.
Yeah.
So that's part of those realistic emergencies too. If the lights went out in your house tonight and didn't come on all night long, do your flashlights have spare batteries? Do you have spare batteries? Are your solar lights charged up? Or you have extra battery packs? What if you need to charge your phone? I have battery packs that are separate of power that I can charge my phone with.
There are like four of those things.
You know, just hanging around the house. They're great. You know, I take them with me different places where I know I'm going to be kind of off the grid. Being prepared for emergencies outside the home, right? I told the story, it's been several months now, about when my friend and I got stuck at the LA airport when there was that active, quote unquote, active shooter. It didn't turn out to be anything. But, you know, we took a real world assessment of what we had there. I'm like, all right, we got our backpacks. My backpack, my travel bag, I have level 3A armor in it. Right. And it doesn't, it's a normal backpack. It's not a tactical bag. It's one of the wilderness backpack or wilderness tactical wombats. So it doesn't look totally tactical. It looks like an outdoor pack, but it's got a sleeve in the back of it that fits a set of 3A hybrid soft armor from AR-500 perfectly. Right. And so I slipped that in there. So it's like, all right, let's take a real world assessment. I am trapped in an airport with a bajillion people. This is freaking LAX, right? I'm trapped panicking here with a ton of people. They're running all over the place. Me and my buddy pull to the side real quick. We get in kind of a hidey hole spot. And, you know, we just come back from training. So we had very little on us. You know, we were traveling light. And so we're looking at it going, all right, what do we got? We got our backpack. We got food. We got water. We got gloves. We have each have a medical kit. You know, we have here's our quote unquote defensive tools that we have accessible to us. We have flashlights. I have a headlamp. You know, here's some of the things. And we kind of started getting ready. You know what I mean? We were physically preparing ourselves to escape.
Yeah.
Right. Or hunker down for a while. And I tell you what, it didn't take long before people noticed that we were not following everybody else. And the people that we attracted to our little group over there were like-minded people who also had things to offer. You know what I mean? One lady had a power block for her cell phone. I had forgotten mine.
Oh, yeah.
And now I always travel with that extra power block.
Oh, dude, I carry one in my everyday bag.
Yeah, I mean, I'd just forgotten it at home before I left. And so she was able to make sure everyone had power. I mean, it was like we had this – pretty soon we had this group of like five or six people that were all relatively well-prepared, just watching the masses just lose their freaking minds because they had no idea. They had no tools. We were locked down for 3 hours. And all the restaurants and everything, of course, were shut down. There were people without water. There are people without food.
Wait, it's an airport. They have water fountains. I've been to LAX.
Yeah, there are water fountains. There's water fountains, but it was hard for people. They had no container. So they could – the lines at the bathrooms, the lines at the water fountains were huge. You know, they had no container. They had no way to take the water away with them.
Good
God. I mean, it was incredible to watch how little people in a mass situation like that, how little they were prepared. You know, and then
there's also the other lesson to learn there is how little you are, in fact, prepared most of the time. Like when you're traveling like that or doing anything, I always have a water bottle in my car.
Sure.
I always have my giant Hydro Flask 40-ounce water bottle. 9 times out of 10, it's full. But I always have a way to put water into something to carry it with me if I need to put it in there.
Right.
Like that's one of those things that most people are like, oh, I never really thought about that before. Ah. It's because you're locked into this zombie apocalypse socioeconomic collapse bullshit. Focus on the things that you're going to need to get through your daily life, you know, and then expand a little bit as you go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's crazy how woefully unprepared most people are for the simplest of things.
The most basic emergencies. So when you think about, again, being prepared, you have to think about the realistic emergencies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we come into kind of another point, which is skills trump tools.
Absolutely.
So you can have all the tools you want in the world. You can have all the guns. You can have all the everything, but skills trump tools. Mm-hmm. You know, we always kind of jokingly say 10 rounds in a dead man's rucksack.
Hey, it's not a joke.
Right.
If that's what it takes.
It's not a joke for us. Right. And the idea is that our skills will trump tools. All right.
Absolutely.
It's cool that people have all these guns and ammo and they're ready to defend their whatever. But do they have the skill set to actually stop an attack on their house, you know? There's more to it than just sticking a gun out every window.
A determined attack.
Yes, a determined attack.
Yeah, there's a
difference.
A difference there.
So. I mean, you get three or four dudes who have any kind of experience in small team tactics. It doesn't even have to be extensive.
No.
It could be one deployment. Like it could be basic freaking training.
Yeah, basic training, and they're going to walk all over.
And you get four dudes together, and they can execute typically a relatively well-coordinated attack on a standard, you know, single-level, single-family home.
Yep.
So if you really think that you're preparing for this kind of emergency, are you actually prepared for that kind of emergency? Do you really know how to stop somebody like that? It's not just going to the range and standing in front of a target and putting holes in it.
No ballistic masturbation kits.
Yeah, and just calling yourself a badass. You know, do you actually, have you sought out that kind of training? Have you found it? Not just read a book on it, but actually gone out and done it? Because understanding it and applying it are two very different things.
Absolutely.
Right? Understanding how an L-shaped ambush is done and actually performing an L-shaped ambush. You remember watching your first L-shaped ambush in training where you were like, cool, this is like monkeys and coconuts and what happens there? You know what I mean?
It's like retards and doorknobs, bro.
Yeah, this is horrible.
I have no idea what's happening.
Well, what did you guys just do? Whereas by the time, you know, after a few repetitions of it, suddenly like, oh yeah, we see where the book version of this doesn't account that there's a rock in my way.
Yeah, or that there's a giant tree, because everywhere that I went through any type of training has always been the most uncomfortable and most terrible terrain in the world. There's nothing open. There's nothing flat. Mm. It's all trees and ferns and thick underbrush and God, I don't know what's happening here.
So you have to look at those kinds of things. You know, are you actually prepared and capable of doing those things against that kind of quote unquote determined enemy? So there's those kind of emergencies we have to prepare for. So we've got fitness.
Mm-hmm.
We've got real understanding what a real world emergency is. We have finances, right?
And skills. Skills, not tools.
And we have skills, not tools. I would say other real world emergencies, like I remember in high school, all right? This is like emergency preparedness 101 for me. When I was in high school, all right, at this point, all chicks are having their period.
Always had a condom in your wallet.
Always, yeah. That's right. Mason, do you know about that? Or he's like, I always had a Pokemon card in my wallet. Never know what you have to throw down with somebody.
No, by the time I was in high school, I never did any of that.
You still do any of that?
Yeah. I started doing it again after I graduated high school, so I didn't get wedgied.
So, real world emergency.
Real world emergency.
There you go, bro.
That's improvise and overcome, Mason.
Prepared for wedgie.
So by this point, right, all chicks are having their period, right? And it always amazed me
that they didn't have the appropriate.
That they didn't have the stuff. Like, they'd be like, "Oh, I'm on my period and I need to go get a tampon from, you know, Mrs. Lewis or whatever." I'm like, "Why do you not have one? You know this happens."
Yeah, this is like not a new thing to you.
You know what I mean?
At some point in high school or middle school, this would become a new thing, and that, you know.
Yeah,
that
but I mean, dude, how many months does it take before you're like, "Hey, I should pretty much always have this."
This happens
crap
every
with
month
me
on a regular basis.
You know, even a even an irregular basis, it could surprise happen at any time. Fine, have the appropriate stuff.
But this is a thing that happens to me now,
right? And that was like my first kind of like aha moment at the fact that other people didn't think like I did. You know what I mean? Because I was like, if I was a chick, I would have that stuff, right?
Yeah,
I would
have one in my
whatever
pocket
it is
at
that
all
I needed
times.
You know, in my shirt, I would have some in my bag. I would have some in my locker. I would keep it in my car. Like there, I would go nowhere without that stuff, right? Yep. And so that's, to me, that's like the most simple of an emergency, a personal emergency that people have that they're just not preparing for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really simple stuff like that. So I think, again, that you know, the kind of next point kind of still goes back to that. And it's prepare for really basic emergencies.
Yeah.
You know, I always think of, like, toilet paper shortage.
Oh, God, no.
Right? What a terrible, terrible way to live, right?
So I have been to the field several times over the last 18 years in my military career. And on less than five but more than one occasions, I've come back with less than two socks. Yeah, less than two socks. And one occasion, it was really bad where I came back with like three quarters of each or one quarter of each sock. Mm. And then I was basically wearing a dickie for a T-shirt.
Nice.
Because I trimmed that sucker off.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, I have. So, I have trimmed.
That's a good idea. I never thought about that.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, good sharp pocket knife.
Sleeves.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. Basically rocking the Dickey T-shirt.
Right.
Yeah,
all right, soldiers, right. You can take your tops off, you know, to work on this stuff. You're like, no, that's okay. I'm good.
I'm all set. So we have to look at, like, personal emergencies like toilet paper, right? Like, I always look at that and go, like, as simple as this may sound.
Yeah, but you have an ungodly amount of toilet paper in your house.
If I go to the closet to get a roll of toilet paper for the bathroom, I get two. Yeah. All right? Because that's one for now and one for later. Yeah. Okay? Because I don't want to be the guy who runs out and doesn't have the backup roll.
Or maybe shit's going so terribly wrong that I need both of them right now.
Yeah, or maybe this is a real emergency.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, mostly people are planning for the currency collapses, food shortages, and those are all realistic things, right? And we should definitely plan for contingencies against those things. But think about the more realistic everyday emergencies. Like, look at your zones. All right, that's the best way for me to teach this. And I've actually got a PowerPoint pulled up on my computer from our practical preparedness class that we teach that breaks it down into four zones. Your first zone is your personal.
Mm-hmm.
That is you. And you have to work outward in these zones, right? You have to prepare you. That's your physical fitness. That's your financial stability. That's your realistic understanding of emergencies. That's your skills, trump tools. That's everything we're talking about. You have to prepare you. You cannot prepare anyone else until you are prepared. Yeah. Right? Would you go to a fitness coach who's a big overweight person? No.
Probably not.
Right? That's probably not going to work out. But I will definitely, if someone is even in a decent amount of shape, and especially if they tell me, hey, I'm still working just like you, I'm still working on it,
mm-hmm.
Heck yeah, that's someone I want to go to.
Or you look and they have a good pedigree. Because, you know, there are a lot of like powerlifting guys and fitness guys out there that are really good at translating the skill set they have. They just can't actually apply them to themselves anymore for whatever
Injuries, illness, whatever.
So.
So yeah, I look for that, right? So it's the same thing for me. I can't train my family, I can't train my friends, I can't affect anybody if I am not squared away. So I have to be squared away first, right? Then my zone number two is my family, right? And for me, my family is primarily my wife and my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But for other people, their family may be their close group of friends, mm-hmm. their family may be their unit, their family may be whatever, right? Their squad, whatever it is, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You still live with your parents, fine. That's your family, right? Whatever your family, whatever you consider family. And that zone two, right, that's your family. Now we got to start looking at other types of kind of practical preparedness. You know, once we get to that kind of zone two, now we have to start looking at things like, okay, what does everyone in my group bring to me or bring to the table, if you want to think of it that way. And then what extra things do I have to do for them?
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, if I'm looking at my kids, well, I have some kids who are very young. So mm-hmm. let's say we're out on the road and the vehicle breaks down. Well, I can tell my oldest kid, like, suck it up. We're going to be here for a little while. Freaking deal with it, okay? And he can get a little hungry and he can get a little thirsty and he'll be okay.
He'll make it.
But my youngest kids, well, it's harder to explain those kinds of things. They don't understand what's happening. So that means
irrational.
I may need to prepare a little extra for them, right? If we have to go someplace, like, oh, crap, we got to get out of here, me active shooter in the mall or something like that, you know, I can grab my oldest and say, grab my belt and don't let go. And I will drag you if I have to.
Yeah.
You know, if you get tired, you just drop those feet and you keep holding on and I will drag your ass out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas my little guys, I can't do that.
No.
So that means I'm going to have to carry them.
Or strap them to you.
Yeah, or somehow strap them to me, right? Or somehow put them up on my shoulders.
But that's
or
not
hold
even
or whatever,
like,
right?
That's a real world thing and not necessarily the mall shooter or the active shooter at the mall or whatever. That's so where I live, I have one way in and one way out. I have the I-17 freeway north and south.
Mm.
Right? Well, as we all know, Arizona's prone to wildfires from time to time.
What?
And we also know that the I-17 in certain areas turns into a parking lot during certain times of the
yes.
day.
Mm.
So I get stuck there. So I'm coming home from the grocery store with my wife and my kids. I get stuck because there's a wildfire up ahead. Well, suddenly this wildfire has begun to spread, and it is spreading rapidly. Mm. And I can't turn my car around, but I need to go, and I need to go now. Like, what do you keep in your car? Like, do you have the ability to do that and do that effectively? Which skills, fitness, like, you know. So, like, the real world stuff, because, I mean, it happens. People get stuck on freeways. The freeway gets closed for whatever reason. Do you have the stuff in your car? Do you have the ability to leave your car? Real world, real life, no shit, this could happen today, tomorrow, next week, or it could never happen.
I'm stuck here.
Yeah, I'm stuck.
But I need to leave because a fire is coming my way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have to think about all those things with your family, whatever that consists of, right? How are you going to communicate with your family? You know, if you send your kid off to school and they can't come home because a fire has burned the house down, or it's been compromised in one way, shape, or form, or something's happened, and how are you going to communicate with your kid? Do you know what school room they're in? Do you know their school schedule? Do you know their teacher well? Can you get on the property? Is it possible for you to get them a note? Do they have a phone you can text? Is there a online connection they can make to go check a bulletin board that your family uses to post important messages on, be it a Facebook page or an Instagram page or something like that where you can post important information to each other? I mean, is there some way that off-site, away from each other, people can check to see if there's an important message that needs to be posted, you know? So once you work from number two, then you work out to what I call the life, right? And life – that's everything else in your life. You may call it, you know, sometimes people may call it, it may be church, it may be work, it may be the places that they go casually hang out at, it might be their recreation, their hobbies, their sports, whatever. But life, right? So life's in another part of emergency preparedness. Can you escape and evade out of your office? Can you escape and evade out of your work? Can you escape and evade? Can your kids escape and evade out of school? Look, here's the fact, guys. I've been through a lot of schools and helped them build emergency programs. I've seen their emergency programs. I've done analysis on school buildings. I've done some training in schools. John's helped me out with some of that stuff. I pretty much plan on my kids doing their own thing.
Yeah, I have a kindergartner, and he's probably the only kid in his class with armor in his backpack.
I mean, I teach my kids how to handle themselves because most of these teachers. Sorry to say, and if you're a public school teacher, God bless you for all the stuff you have to put up with. But the majority of teachers I meet are not prepared for an emergency.
No.
Not even a little. Mm-mm. And so, you know, they're going to more likely put my child in danger than they are to help them, you know. So it's like, can your kid, if they go to school, your wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, if they go to work, do they have the capability to get out of there? Where are their high threat areas? Where are your high threat areas in your life, right? If we're going to prepare for emergencies, I'll use a William April quote, which is, is it a place that supports crime, around people that support a crime, at a time that supports a crime?
Yep.
Right? Where do people need to be more aware, more on point, more switched on, whatever you want to call it, and where are those high threat areas? You know, where do I need to be more prepared? Like John said, he kind of lives out in a more remote place, so certain types of crime that might happen in my house aren't as likely to happen at John's. But certain natural disasters that are more likely to happen at John's house are less likely to happen at mine, just because of how we live differently. So I have to start identifying these things in my life. That will help me prepare appropriately. There's things John will prepare for that I necessarily don't have to prepare for, you know, and vice versa. So we gotta want to look at things. We gotta think about things like effects of alcohol and or drugs on all of these decisions, right? It's one of those things like if you imbibe, right, you have to think about how that can affect your judgment in emergencies and when are you willing to lower your guard, you know? Certainly that's something I have to think about, right? If you're going to drink in a certain environment, how much are you willing to drink? How much you're willing to lower your guard in that environment versus other environments you may be in. More casual, I don't really know everybody here environment. That's a one beer environment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Versus everything else might be, okay, I'm with friends. I'm surrounded by people I trust in a place I trust, a place that's least likely to support crime around. People are least likely to support crime. At times are least likely to support crime. All right, maybe have a few extra drinks here.
I had an incident. Not an incident, but an occurrence when we were at SHOT Show. We had all been out drinking and turns out I had to walk a pretty long way by myself, and I'd had probably more than I should have to have done that. But the the longer that walk got, the more sober I got and the more switched on I became as the further my steps went and the more my brain was like, hey, that was a poor choice, retard. You probably shouldn't have done that knowing what you had to do now. So, yeah, it's definitely something to think about for sure. Like, and that was a thing that I never really put that much thought into that, you know, because I just always assumed that, generally speaking, there's two or three of us always together. Well, this particular night, that's not the case. So it was kind of awkward and uncomfortable. But I was still confident enough in my skill set that if stuff had gone south, I felt I was still able to handle myself appropriately. But
was that the night after we left?
Yeah, it was like Wednesday night or Thursday night. Thursday night. I think it was Thursday night.
Yeah, and we would have walked back together, but I had to work the next morning, and they were out late, and I was like, shit.
Yeah.
So I also walked home pretty much alone and then was like, yay.
Wow, all the way back to our fine hotel up there. That was not a great neighborhood to walk through, by the way.
Eh, whatever.
So then the fourth zone and kind of the final zone is your community, right? And your community is however far out you can reach, right? Whether that's your neighborhood, whether that's your extended family, whether that if you have a big influence and you can, you know, you can train people or you can get classes together or you can affect, you know, people in your church or whatever, like that's your community. How far out can you go? And you also have to look at where you actually live. Like John was talking about, he lives right next to a major freeway. So what happens if that freeway shuts down? How does that affect his ability to get in and out?
Ugh.
You know, where I'm at, if the major freeway shuts down, meh. I've got alternate routes, and I've already, you know, I've planned those alternate routes out. I know which ones are least likely to be taken. I know the ones that are most likely to be taken. There are certain places I avoid during certain times of the day because I know they're incredibly busy, and that increases my chance to be in a vehicle accident, get trapped, you know, increases my likelihood of being a quote unquote victim of crime, mm-hmm. right? All those kinds of things. So I don't, I have to plan those things out based on my community, you know, and where you live. And I grew up in rural middle of nowhere. I mean, what I prepared for as a kid, very, very different than what I prepare for now. What my parents prepared me for as a kid is much different than what I prepare my kids for. Mm-hmm. So these things are always going to be changing and evolving as you move locations, move jobs, you move your office building, you change environments. Like we go to SHOT Show. Now mm-hmm. we're in a totally different city. This is not our city. This is not a place we know it well because we've been there a lot, but we don't know it that well.
No.
We don't know all the ins and outs.
What we do know well is a very limited area.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's basically the strip and like one street in either direction. Right. Trip. That's right. Beyond that, nope.
Wherever we've
it.
Had to do stuff, you know? And so there's this whole idea of emergency preparedness that it seems to escape the general public. And when they think of preppers, survivalists, or emergency preparedness, instantly food shortage, water shortage, zombie apocalypse, Russian paratroopers, all that stuff starts popping in their head. What doesn't pop in their head is, I got to walk back to the hotel from a business meeting or whatever.
Yeah.
I've had a couple drinks.
It's
I
2 o'clock
get there.
In the morning.
Why don't you Uber, dude?
I'm retarded.
Oh, dude, I'm all about it.
Because I was the only one with Uber on my phone.
Dude,
I just haven't downloaded it to my phone because I'm lazy.
I'm all about that Uber, dude. So freaking easy. But it's so it involves these zones, right, of working individually, ourselves first, always working on ourselves first.
Yeah.
Then trying to influence our family, whatever that means to you, influencing your life, whatever that means to you, what's your daily life, and then beyond your daily life, what kind of influence can you have in your community? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can have a lot. Maybe you can just have a little. Maybe you don't really have much. It doesn't matter. Try to work on these zones. You know, and individually, we're looking at, you know, the things we covered, physical fitness, financial preparedness, skills over tools, planning for realistic emergencies. You know, I think it was a couple others in there. But these are all things that, you know, the more we prepare for these things individually, the better we'll be prepared as a community. Mm-hmm. What if everyone in our community was preparing like this?
Ha, that'd be great.
You know, emergencies would suddenly cease to become emergencies.
Yeah, they'd just be like, oh, well, this thing happened.
It's just another Whatever. Thing.
Yeah.
Right? But instead, we have so many emergencies because people fail to prepare. Mm-hmm. And failing to prepare is preparing
hey, got
to
a
fail.
Set of batteries that I could borrow or a flashlight I could
yes,
have?
Yes, my famous, why I bought black tarping to put over my windows story because, we had a power outage at my house. It was years ago, but, you know, we're a couple hours into it, and you know, the Stilson household
sun had set and everything was still
as
going
normal. That I thought, I didn't really think much about it until my neighbor started knocking on the doors asking for flashlights. I'm going, how do you even know I have flashlights? Oh, dude, we can. Your whole house is lit up, and I'm like, shit, right?
So oh, crap.
I went out and bought a big old roll of black tarping, and obviously there's a lot other. That if I really had to tarp out my windows, I would use more than just tarping. There's other things you have to utilize there. Mm-hmm. Ballistic glass. Point is, that's kind of the last part of emergency preparedness is, what do people know that you have or know, and is your OPSEC, PERSEC appropriate for the situation?
Word.
Because that's important as well. All right. So on that note, that's pretty much, I think, all the time we've got. Next week, we're going to be talking about handgun combatives and how to not get shot with your own gun. So
impossible, because every time you use a handgun, it's always going to be perfect, and you're never going to have to fight anybody physically.
So this weekend, we're going to be hosting the ShivWorks Vehicle Combatives class. I'll have, I'm sure, some good lessons.
Oh, Lord.
Some good lessons to share with you guys from that. It's basically our Extreme Close Quarters Concepts class from ShivWorks.
In the front seat of a car.
In a car. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to learn a lot, and a lot of other gun people
are gonna, seatbelts.
They're all a lot of other people are going to learn a lot. But yeah, we'll be talking about that. Trying to get a guest on the show. I've got someone I'm trying to line up. I'm not sure if they can make it yet or not, but we'll see what happens. We may have a guest, we may not. But either way, next week we'll be talking about handgun combatives and how to not get shot with your own gun. So we'll be talking about weapon retentions as well. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you if you have if you want some information about how to get us out. info@trainingaz.com is our email address. We'll happily give you all that information. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Redwire Gear.
Yeah.
We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Remember to check out the other shows that Heroes Media Group has on the network, and we are coming to you live today from the Wilderness Tactical Studio. Be sure to check out thewilderness.com. They got some cool new products coming out soon, so make sure you keep an eye open for those. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room. Gate through the night.